Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
We love boy moms here at On Boys. We're checking in with Gemma Gaudette. We talked with her a couple years ago. Want to see how things are going now? This is the On Boys Parenting Podcast. We are your co-hosts, Jennifer L.W. Fink of buildingboys.net, and I'm Janet Allison of boysalive.com. Thanks for being here, and thank you, too, for supporting our sponsors.
Boy moms are some of my favorite people. Obviously not exclusively, Janet. I like you, too.
Thank you.
But today we are talking with one of our favorite boy moms, Gemma Gaudette. Gemma is a mom of two boys, and she is the host of Idaho Matters, a Boise State public radio show about the arts, politics, growth, and education. Full disclosure, Janet and I have both been guests on Gemma's show, and we recorded our first On Boys podcast with her back in 2021 when her boys were 9 and 13. Now her guys are 11 and 15, and we thought it would be fun to catch up, see what things have changed and what stayed the same, especially now that more people seem to be thinking about and talking about masculinity, gender, and boys. Welcome, Gemma.
It is so good to see both of you again. I love doing this.
All right, straight off, you think, from your perspective, that things have gotten better or worse for boys in general since we last talked?
Oh, that is a good question. I don't think they've gotten worse, but I don't necessarily think they've gotten better. I think they've kind of stayed the same, frankly. And I think some of that is I feel like we're talking about, you know, this toxic masculinity in terms of like adult men and how it impacts adult men. And I would argue that we need to be talking about it even sooner, right? Because I think we start to see it really when boys kind of start to figure out their gender, which with both of my boys was around about 3-4 years old, where all of a sudden they were like, I'm a boy. Because all of a sudden it's like society then starts putting these masculine traits on your child. And there is a difference between being a boy and what we in our culture think is masculine. Because I have two very sensitive boys, and we, you know, and I have one who's quite dramatic and quite emotional, right? We like to
put- I'm laughing a little bit because I have followed Gemma online for a while now, and sometimes she will share videos of this kid, and she quite dramatic, maybe an understatement for your child, Gemma.
100%, right? But those qualities are what we tend to label girls.
That is true.
And we need to be talking about this, I think, with how, frankly, adults in our society put this toxic masculinity on boys at a very young age. So long story short, I don't think it's gotten better, but I don't necessarily think it's gotten worse.
You know, it's so interesting because I feel like yes to all of that. And because we see and talk about, you know, harmful versions of masculinity and all the, frankly, terrible things that some guys do that have been written off and have gotten passes for years, I also see people kind of imposing that on boys in a way that they expect boys to do those things and they almost treat them as if they've done them, or they so overreact if a boy just, I mean, a boy could literally accidentally bump into another kid, totally incidental contact. And sometimes it's taken as a provocation and it's taken as, you know, oh, he might be violent. And so I feel like there's that side of it too.
Oh, you're speaking my language. I 100% agree with that statement. I think that you know, let's talk about even dating, right? And we're not quite there yet with my oldest, but I've seen it with, you know, his friends and all of that. But all of a sudden, when you talk about like dating relationships with these, and they're kids, right? They're yes. 14, 15, 16 years old. It is this idea of, you know, you will treat a girl with respect. You will do this. You will do that. It's like, of course they will. But there's an automatic assumption that boys are bad. There is an automatic assumption that a boy is a predator and that a boy is inherently bad. What I like to say to that is, give me some credit to how I am raising my children.
Nice.
And I am raising good boys. Now, they're boys. They're physical. They've got testosterone, right? There are these things where I think we can get very uncomfortable thinking that boys are aggressive. Mm. And we also have such horrible examples, you know, right now in our culture of boys who are highly aggressive. I mean, to the point of being killers, right?
Yeah. And I mean, we can't neglect that. It's a fact, right? There have been plenty, almost exclusively of the mass shooters have been young males. So 100%. Much of their gun violence around the country, cities, country, is young males. So we can't neglect that. Yes, that is a fact, but that's not everybody.
It's not everybody. And it is, and it's one of these things where I just get very frustrated as a boy mom when we label all boys as bad, as aggressive, as having anger issues. Because I think that when we do that, at some point our boys believe that.
Yeah. We had Michael Gurian on the podcast not too long ago, and he talks about aggression nurturance. And aggression does not equal violence. So he talks about aggression nurturance. And this is boys, right? He's going to come and give you a bear hug. He's going to, you know, do that more physical expression of his feelings than typically girls would do. And you're right. We can be uncomfortable with that, but it's not bad and it's not wrong.
Here's an example I'll give you just in my house, right? So my boys are 3.5 years apart. My oldest, who just turned 15 in early May, he's a big kid. He's between, I don't know, like 6'1", 6'2", he's about 200 pounds. He's a big,
at 15.
Strong kid. At 15. My 11-year-old is about 4'11", right? He's about 90 pounds. And they go at it, you know, physically. There was this point, though, where we kept saying to our oldest, we were like, you can't be physical with him. You're going to hurt him, you know, so you just can't do that. Well, our youngest can be a little brat. And he also saw an opening to be able to be physical because he didn't have any repercussions with it, right? So they... So they would get into these fights and our youngest would just start pummeling our oldest. But our oldest, who really is this gentle giant, would finally lose it, right? And just, And so I had this really long talk with my oldest a couple of weeks ago. He was very upset and he was just like, he goes, there was this, I could feel in a way that he almost felt like a victim of abuse. And I think we had kind of set that up in a sense. And so I said to him, I go, well, if he punches you, I go, don't you push him? He's like, well, no, you told me not to touch him. Mm-hmm. And I was like, okay. And I said, so I think we have a miscommunication here. Because when we say, don't be physical, when we say, you know, you're going to hurt him. And then you say, well, I just want to beat him up. I go, I'm going to believe you want to beat him up. And that's not good. You can't do that. I mean, there's many issues with that that come along with that. And I said, but I had no idea that you were taking it so literally, that you were literally, you were sitting here taking it. I go, yeah, you can push him. You can shove him. 100%. If he's getting up in your face so horribly, and I've seen him get aggressive with you, you have every right to push him or shove him and get him off you. And then my oldest was like, he started crying and he was like, I can't believe you thought I'd want to beat him up. He goes, you know, he goes, even when I get so angry with him, he goes, he gets scared. Like when I get mad at him, he gets scared. And then I see him get scared and I don't want to hurt him. I don't want to hurt him. So my whole point with that story is it's like, we don't sometimes give boys enough credit to have all of these emotions, right? And for us to have these conversations with them, to kind of walk them through it and to say, you know what? You have every right to feel the way you feel. And you have every right, frankly, especially when it's your brother and your boys, if he's hitting you and punching you, yeah, you can shove him, right?
Right.
You can get him off you. Girls don't necessarily interact like that. And I think sometimes, again, we assume that we can teach the boy out of boys, if that makes
sense. I'm sorry, that was a experienced mom of four boys going, no, that does not work.
It doesn't, right? So you have to almost put these boundaries with boys where they can be physical with each other.
You know, I find myself thinking, and I bet you did too, Janet, do you remember when we talked with Teacher Tom and he was talking about roughhousing with young kids and boys and girls, because remember at his preschool, like they don't frown on roughhousing. They kind of create room for that. And he talked about how exquisitely children pay attention to each other. They are watching those cues. The fact that your oldest was able to verbalize that, frankly, is like pretty astounding. But what he said right there is so reassuring, because even when these two brothers are going at it, right? Mm-hmm. When they're angry at each other and voices are raised and sometimes they're physical, they are watching. And there's that line that your oldest son doesn't want to cross. He doesn't want to really hurt his brother physically or emotionally. And I'm tearing up thinking about this because it's such a beautiful thing.
Right. And that's the whole thing. And as a mom, for me, was this aha moment of like, oh, okay, you don't want to beat the snot out of him. I mean, there's a part of you that does. Which sure. I sometimes don't blame you for.
Right.
But you really don't want to do something that will harm him. But at the same time, I read this thing, and I wish I could remember where it was, but it was this idea of you have two kids in your home that do not have brains that are fully formed, that, you know, their frontal lobes are not formed. They are completely separate personalities. And you've kind of created a situation as a family for them to have to figure each other out and live in this, not necessarily chaos, but live in an environment that is highly uncomfortable because of those factors, right? And we just, I feel like we have to give boys room to breathe. And to say that it is okay to actually kind of sometimes feel this aggression, because you're gonna feel it.
Yeah.
How do you work through it? And what does that look like in certain situations, right? Because I think in the situation with my kids, it's like, look, if you have to get physical with each other sometimes, we need to put some parameters around that. But I'm not gonna disallow that anymore because I feel like I did more harm than good.
Even in terms of the pure physicality of it, right?
Yeah.
So you've got a 15-year-old who is certainly heavier than his brother right now, stronger than his brother right now, taller than his brother right now. Mm-hmm. He's learning how to use his body. The 11-year-old's learning his body. And like, he's just waiting for the day when he will be 100%. Stronger and bigger. And I've seen a lot of times they like to just test their abilities. Mm-hmm. Against each other, mm-hmm. because someday, mm-hmm. and they don't know when that day is, but someday your youngest is going to be able to match or take down your oldest. And he just wants to keep trying to find out when that day is.
100%. I mean, we talk about that a lot, right? But then I think too, when we look at this idea of, I don't like the word to use aggression, but I mean, you know, but they do, they feel those, they it's the testosterone in them. I mean, these are boys, these are men. So how do we funnel that, right?
Yes.
So like, for example, with me, I have told both of them that it's like, you have every right to be angry with me. You don't have to like me. I mean, you do not have to like me. In fact, I'm not your friend, but you will be respectful of me. you will never lay your hand on me.
Yeah.
Right. And you will be respectful, even when you disagree with me, because you can disagree with me. You can argue with me. You can do all of those things. But here are the parameters in how you will do that.
And that's what they need to hear. That's what they need to hear.
Yes.
You can do this, but you can't do that. And I think what you said earlier, Gemma, about going, starting younger, starting way earlier, then you cannot wait till you have a tween or a teen and start talking about these things. It has to start earlier. We had Dr. Larry Cohen on, and he has a book about roughhousing and the importance of roughhousing, and recognizing that one of the ways our boys express themselves, connect, and bond with each other is this physical interaction, if you want to call it that, that we're talking about. That's how, and Jen alluded to it too, of just, that's how they're figuring each other out.
And themselves.
And finding that line for themselves. I don't want to hurt my brother. Oops, I hurt my brother. Empathy developed. Yeah. Allowing it, not making it wrong, and in your home, because they're going to get the message at school, like, you know, it's hands off at recess. You can't do that. So they're always getting this message that what they're doing with their bodies is wrong.
And I feel like in a lot of ways, they're getting that message everywhere, right? That who they are is wrong. And that goes back to this idea of toxic masculinity, right? I mean, I've always said to my boys since they were very little, I've never told my boys to stop crying. And now I do tell them, like, if you need to continue crying, please go in another room.
Because that's boundaries again, right? The crying is not wrong. But right now I have a work call I need to do. So if you need to continue with that, go somewhere else.
Yeah. And you're driving me crazy. So go somewhere else, right?
Boundaries.
But the whole thing is it's like, but that feeling is not wrong. Mm-hmm. And no matter what feelings my kids have, it's not wrong. I mean, to the point now at 11 and 15, when we can be like in a, you know, just heated discussion and I might say something and they're like, oh, well, so that feeling isn't right. I can't have that. And they throw it back at me. And then I'm like, no, that feeling is right. You are allowed to have that feeling. You are allowed to have that feeling. There is no wrong feeling, but you can't do X, Y, and Z. Right. Yeah. And it's going back to that, but they throw it back at me to this point.
The teen years are so fun for that.
Because they know more than you.
And because they have been listening all these years. And because as they get, you know, a little more sophisticated in their thinking, they know where your soft spots are. They know where your vulnerabilities are. And they know which of your words have you said in the past they can use, maybe out of context, but sort of fits in. And yeah, they'll throw it right back at you.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't understand. I've never experienced that. What else? But also, I'm the parent, so I should know how to fix it.
Right.
That was a new one the other day. And, you know, with that, it was interesting too, because it kind of hit me that, so I said, once again, with my oldest, I was like, I don't have all the answers. I don't know how to tell you that, but I don't, kind of winging it, but I will tell you this.
As Mother's Day is coming around, I find I'm missing my mom more and more. And there's always questions and stories I wish I had asked her when she was still here. I do remember that I gave her a book once upon a time with questions for her to write the answers to. And bless her heart, she didn't answer very many. So that was really a disappointment. But fast forward to now and technology. And now we have mylifeinabook.com. It takes all those questions and stories and it puts it in a format that is sent to your person, whoever you designate, on a regular basis so that the prompts come, they're easily answered either written or voice to text, and they're captured by mylifeinabook.com. These family stories, this legacy that you want to leave for your children and your grandchildren. Mylifeinabook.com, create an unforgettable gift for your mom, your dad, your children this Mother's Day. Use our coupon code ONBOYS for 10% off. Go to mylifeinabook.com and use ONBOYS for 10% off. Create that legacy. Carry on those stories.
We talk at you all the time. Now we want to talk with you. Janet and I are partnering and we are so excited. We will be offering a 3-session series. Talk with boys like a pro about anything and everything.
3 sessions, 3 weeks in a row. Jen, I'm so excited about this because not only do we get to see each other again in a week, but we get to talk directly with our listeners, and we'll be bringing great information, but also there will be time for discussion, time for questions. And that is truly where the gold is.
We will troubleshoot in real life all those questions that pop into your head when you hear us do podcasts and make suggestions. This is your chance to ask, to clarify, to really drill down into how you can use these communication techniques and shift your strategies in your home, in your family, with your child.
Go to boysalive.com/boys and all the info is there. Get registered. This is going to be a whole lot of fun. Again, that's Talk with Boys Like a Pro about anything and everything. We will be live in May. All the details are at boysalive.com/boys. And get registered. Don't delay. This is going to be so much fun, and it's going to give you peace of mind, new information, new insights. We hope you'll join us. And we're going to pause for just a moment for these messages from our sponsors, and then you can find out what Gemma said.
That we can figure anything out together.
Love that.
So we can figure it out. So even last night, he and his younger brother got in this knockdown, drag-out fight. And, you know, dad intervenes, right? And so then that testosterone comes into the mix. For God's sakes.
That's when you go in the other room, Gemma.
This is when you're just like, I need to take a bath.
I seriously need to just go away for a minute. But we ended up, you know, I ended up talking with my oldest and, you know, he was really upset with his dad, which he felt was taking his younger brother's side. And it was, your dad overreacted, but he once again was like, oh, you're going to hurt your brother. So they talked this morning and figured everything out. But what I said to my oldest at that point was, you know, here's what you've told me. Here's what your brother has told me. And I will tell you this, I wasn't here. I didn't see it. And so it's very difficult for me to have an opinion on it. But I will tell you this, you love your brother. Your brother loves you. You two get really angry with each other because you have these ideas of who the other person is. We need to figure out a way that you two can figure out your differences and find a path forward. We can do it together. We have to put our heads together and we have to figure it out. And I go, you're still going to fight. You're still going to argue. You're still going to have times where you don't like each other. But what you need to remember is that you love him and he loves you.
Nice.
And
I love
we can
this.
Do this together.
I love this. You both know one of the things that I wrote about in my book, Building Boys, is, you know, you mentioned consent and dating and relationships earlier, Gemma. Huge topic. Everybody thinks about boys and what we need to teach our boys for that. And yes, we have to have explicit conversations, you know, and make sure that they understand sex, make sure they understand boundaries, how to take care of themselves, all of these things. But it's bigger than that. It's relationship education. It is how to get along with and respect and respond to other people. So even in these moments, in all of these sibling moments, and in talking about, hey, you disagree, and here's how you do that, and we can work through this, all these things, you're talking specifically about brother interactions, but it applies to the larger world. Look at the relationship education that you're giving them. That's the things that boys and girls and all of us need to know to live in any kind of a relationship, whether that is, you know, a married relationship, a living together relationship, or frankly, even our relationships with our coworkers or in community. How do we get along with people that we don't always agree with and sometimes we think are stupid? And why do we have to be stuck together?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and I'll tell you this, like my husband and I have never shied away from having disagreements in front of our kids. Part of it is my parents never argued in front of us, ever. So I have a very vivid memory of being a senior in college. I come home for the weekend, my dad and I go out to lunch, and my dad is just going off about my mom. I mean, he is so angry and he's just having a moment. And I looked at him and I was like, are you getting divorced? And he was like, what? No, I was pissed off at your mom. And I'm like, oh. I'm like, okay, so you've never done that. You literally have it like scarred me. Like, because I had
destabilizing,
never...
right?
Yes, right. Well, and also because they had never disagreed in front of us. And so we never saw the disagreement and then we never saw them making up. It took me years to figure out how to do that.
Yeah.
Right? In a healthy way. And so it is highly important to me that it's like my kids see my husband and I disagree. They see us have our moments, but they always see us make up and everything like that. And I see that pattern in my kids as well.
Yes.
Now that they fight, right? And here's the thing, they fight, then they piss us off and we're all mad for the rest of the day. And
fine.
Five minutes later, they're like hugging and having a great old time. And then they're like, why are you guys so mad? Because we're so mad.
Yeah.
But I see them pattering themselves after us.
I want to veer a little bit. I'm going to, because this is coming into my mind and I really want to talk about this. And that is, you are raising amazing boys. Jen, you're raising amazing boys. And that's obvious. Then we go out into the world and there's fear of boys.
Yeah.
And I think partly I got into this work 25 years ago because I had a class of 10 boys and 2 girls and they were first graders. And there were, I can admit now, there was some fear of like, what if they go out and I can't get them back in? And they were strong and opinionated. And I didn't really have the tools. I was a new teacher and I didn't raise boys. So I was like swimming in the ocean of that. But the other, so there's that. And I am a mentor of teachers and I've seen this of female teachers being quote unquote afraid of the boys. I've experienced this. I used to live in Portland, big city, walk down the street and there's 4 or 5 teenage boys walking towards me. Oh, what's, you know, and I have that moment. And then it's like, no, they're just boys. And I always try to say hello and I'm 65 and I'm like invisible to them, but still I try to, you know, interact.
Yes.
So talk about that. What about this fear that I don't know. Do you have that fear? Is that just me?
No, I mean, so I'll tell you this, because of the size of my oldest, I definitely think about that. Now, with that said, I want to be very clear that my children are white. So there's a privilege there.
Absolutely.
I mean, there is a full-on privilege there that I don't ever have to be concerned about. Right. If my child were a child of color and he were as big as he is, I would be scared to death to allow him to wander around downtown by himself.
Yep.
Because my oldest, like we live in Boise. He goes downtown all the time. We live super close to downtown. It's really great for him to be able to have that autonomy. But we've also talked with our boys quite a bit about how they need to behave, right? How they need to be in public. And because I do think that there is this societal fear of teenage boys, right? I think if you are a boy of color, it starts younger than that. Mm-hmm. But in particular, I think with white children, and this is my experience, is that with my oldest, there is a definite, like, I see people like look at him and their eyes get huge. Cause not only is he big, he's got this like blonde afro that like is this whole situation. So it's just, he's a presence.
When Gemma is taking her hands and making like, you know, a foot radius around her head. And I really don't think that she's exaggerating too much. It is an impressive head of hair on this child.
It is something. And so, yes, but we have talked to him, to both of them about, all right, you make eye contact. You don't misbehave in public, right? You don't goof around to the fact where if you can feel if someone's feeling uncomfortable. And so be aware of that and everything. Because my oldest will go with a couple of his friends, right? And they'll go downtown and they'll goof around and hang out. But this also goes back to what we've said to him. It's like, you know, we live in a small enough place that people know us, see you. So, I mean, for example, I had a girlfriend text me one day being like, I saw him downtown. And I'm like, so you are a reflection in this regard of your parents, mm-hmm. of your family. So just make good choices. So I don't know if that answered your question, but I'm aware of it. It's just, I think it's so different though than like when there are boys of color. And I will say this, that my youngest, quite a few of his friends are boys of color. We've actually had conversations with him about, you know, when you, as you get older and you are out with your friends, they might be treated differently.
Yeah.
And then you need to be an upstander mm-hmm. because you're white. Your dad's in the legal profession, right? Mm. I will tell you this, we've always said to our boys, don't you ever use our jobs as privilege unless you are in a situation with a friend who might be BIPOC. You stand up.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You stand up.
Yeah.
And you say who your dad is. That's when you say who your dad is,
right? Use it then.
You use it then. So in a way, it's almost like use your power of privilege for good.
Appropriately.
Because you use it appropriately and use it in the right circumstances. Because I do think that sometimes what I see with my oldest, not necessarily him, but some of the kids, you know, in his school, is there is that power of privilege that not only they take for granted, but they use it in a way that's not productive and is not respectful. And then that goes back to this idea that boys are inherently bad.
This episode is sponsored by Heart.
Babies need to eat. And whether you breastfeed or bottle feed, use formula, combine all of the above, you need options. We wanted to let you know about ByHeart baby formula. ByHeart has a patented protein blend that gets the closest to breast milk. It includes two of the most abundant proteins in breast milk. And ByHeart actually ran a clinical trial comparing their formula to a leading infant formula and proved that babies on ByHeart have softer poops, less spit up, and easier digestion. ByHeart is also the only US-made infant formula to use organic, grass-fed whole milk. So if you need baby formula for your baby, consider ByHeart. New customers can get 10% off your first order by using code ONBOYS at ByHeart.com. That's BYHEART.com/podcast. And it is 10% off your first order. ByHeart.com/podcast. This is a limited time offer and additional terms and conditions may apply.
We talk at you all the time. Now we want to talk with you. Janet and I are partnering and we are so excited. We will be offering a 3-session series. Talk with boys like a pro about anything and everything.
3 sessions, 3 weeks in a row. Jen, I'm so excited about this because not only do we get to see each other again in a week, but we get to talk directly with our listeners, and we'll be bringing great information, but also there will be time for discussion, time for questions, and that is truly where the gold is.
we will troubleshoot in real life all those questions that pop into your head when you hear us do podcasts and make suggestions. This is your chance to ask, to clarify, to really drill down into how you can use these communication techniques and shift your strategies in your home, in your family, with your child.
Go to boysalive.com/boys and all the info is there. Get registered. This is going to be a whole lot of fun.
Again, that's Talk with Boys Like a Pro about anything and everything. We will be live in May. All the details are at boysalive.com/boys. And get registered. Don't delay. This is going to be so much fun, and it's going to give you peace of mind, new information, new insights. We hope you'll join us.
I want to comment on this fear of boys. It's related directly, Gemma, to this, you know, idea boys are bad. And it's so ingrained in so many of us. And frankly, many of us who are female, and there are reasons for that, right? I mean,
100%.
We all know and have experienced some of the ways in which women can be harmed by men. We know these things. And so it's floating around in the ether. It's part of our brains. I will admit that I very much felt that, you know, fear of groups of guys, fear of teenage boys. Until I had teenage boys and I realized what doofuses they are. Oh my gosh. It's like, this is what I was afraid of. One of the things that was interesting to me, and I'm curious about your boys, Gemma, also, is as my boys got older, they started noticing some of that in society mm-hmm. and in how people interact with them. When you are a little boy, you are adorable and people fawn over you, right? And then you hit puberty and you go through puberty and suddenly people don't gravitate towards you. They don't assume that you're sweet. And sometimes mm-hmm. people will cross the street when they see you with your friends. I remember one of my guys when he was in college noticed very much, like if he was walking down the street with a group of friends and there was a group of girls, they would cross the street to avoid them. I can understand why the girls did that, but this affects boys too. And so I'm wondering, have your guys noticed any of this as they've gotten older?
My youngest is too young for that yet. Okay. I mean, he's still definitely in that. And also because of his personality, he's still kind of in that, oh my God, you're so cute phase. With my oldest, I do think that he does notice it. I don't think he hasn't necessarily said anything yet, but I think he can feel it. And this goes back to, I don't want to make this so simple and be like, oh, this is the answer mm-hmm. because I think it's very nuanced. But I will say that with my oldest in particular, I think manners matter. And I know that sounds really silly, mm-hmm. but manners do matter in the sense of like, he looks people in the eye when he speaks to them. He shakes their hand. He can interact with an adult. He, you know, we're like, don't hunch down, don't put your head down. It's those types of things, because is it his responsibility at 15 years old to make adults feel comfortable? No, it's not. However, he also is going to get certain reactions if he is not proactive in this situation. Mm-hmm. We've been very big on how they interact with other people, in particular when we are in social situations. And what's interesting is now with both my boys, we hear quite often, like, your boys are so polite. They've got such good manners. I mean, they've got such good manners. Like, they say please and they say thank you and they can order a meal at a restaurant, right? And I do think that we've lost some of that nuance in our society. I really do. And I'm not trying to say let's flip it back to the 1950s, but do you think there's something to be said about teaching our children how to interact in society?
You mentioned something just now that I'm going to relate to something you said previous. When you were talking to your boys, especially your oldest, like basically these weren't your words, but it was basically like, don't kill your brother, you know,
totally.
You can't be physical with him. He took that very literally. And when you talked, you realized how literally he took it. This is extremely common. Boys, especially boys this age, they are very literal. They are concrete thinkers. the more specific and simple directions you can give them, the better. And so the fact that you are having explicit conversations, you know, look somebody in the eye, shake hands, might be hold a door. And my boys will do this for people of all ages, all genders,
100%,
all whatever. It's not a guy girl thing at all. These, we can't assume that these manners are necessarily things that our boys will automatically pick up. These are concrete, discrete skills that can be taught, and also role modeling them helps. I've noticed, because I hear my boys say it all the time, like, we'll go somewhere and they'll thank the server, they'll thank the checkout person.
Yeah.
Guess what? I do that all the time. I have always done that. I didn't realize that they were picking it up, but although you guys, you'll probably find this funny, because he is a teenager and, you know, teenage boys like to push boundaries and like to be funny. We went out for Mother's Day brunch the other day, and I noticed my 17-year-old was saying thank you a lot. And he does say thank you a lot. He thanks me. He thanks his dad. He thanks everybody. But like, the server would come to our table and he would manage to get in 4 or 5 thank yous before she left. It turned out that he had started that the day before when we went out to dinner to celebrate his brother's graduation, because it kind of became a game between him and his brother, like who could say thank you the most and if she would notice and comment on it.
That's hilarious.
So,
that is so.
Boys.
Teenage boys in particular.
Yes.
Well, and I think, you know, it goes back to, I do see in particular with my oldest, Janet, to your point about this fear, is that when he engages with other people, in particular adults, when he is out in public, you almost see their guard like come down. It's like people's shoulders relax. Yeah. Like you can see a physical transformation in other people because he is literally engaging, mm-hmm. right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that helps with kind of taking those walls and those barriers and those stereotypes mm-hmm. down by, honest to God, just teach your kids to have, you know, just some rudimentary manners, right? Please, thank you. Because getting back to your point, Jen, I do think that there is an assumption that kids will just learn it. And mm-hmm. look, here's the thing. My kids won't even brush their teeth if I don't tell them to do it. So, I mean, they will come home and they will be up from the gym and they will smell so bad. And I'm like, you need to take a shower. Why? Because I can smell you.
Can I share a toothbrushing story?
Go right ahead.
All right. Most listeners know for many years, for at least 10 years, maybe closer to 15, it was me and the boys, me and 4 boys in a house. We had one bathroom. So, you know, one tube of toothpaste in the bathroom, shared, you know, all our toothbrushes are in there. 2 years ago, year and a half ago, moved into a house with my husband. Now we have multiple bathrooms. My husband and I share a bathroom and a tube of toothpaste. The boys are upstairs. I have been shocked at how quickly the tube of toothpaste disappears. And it's just me and my husband, which goes to show that for a lot of those years where I was living with 4 boys, they were not using that toothpaste very often, Gemma, and I did not know that.
Can I tell you? Okay, just this morning, my oldest yells down the stairs, Mom, like, what? I'm out of toothpaste. My first thought was like, oh my God, you actually use it.
These are the milestones we celebrate.
They are. But I mean, that goes back to, we can't make assumptions about our kids, right? Yes. We can't make assumptions that they're going to take a shower when I can smell your butt, because literally I've had to say that, right? I mean, telling them to brush their teeth. It is these things that if you don't tell them, they honestly will not do. So if you don't show them manners, they're not going to have them. And it does make a difference, I think, in particularly with boys and teenage boys. You can dispel a lot of people who are uncomfortable when they see a group of teenage boys, when those boys just have good manners, that they are kind. I mean, they're still going to do dumb stuff because yep. they're teenage yep. boys.
100%.
But there's no. going to be a level of, like, just honestly, just people breathing kind of a sigh of relief and not making assumptions about those boys. I know that's simple, and I'm sure there'll be people like, come on. I mean, manners.
It's part of it.
But it is, it's part of the whole bigger picture.
The other thing that we have to do, both for our boys and for our communities at large, that can help dispel some of this fear, and I mentioned this in chapter 9 of my book, Connect Him to the Real World, because our boys need to have opportunities to interact in the communities with people outside of their age group, right? Mm-hmm. So to interact with both older people and younger people and do things, hopefully, of use in the community. Because when boys get those opportunities to be in community, to do things with people, to interact with them, as you said, Gemma, you can almost just see some of those barriers and preconceived notions coming down and dripping away. And that's one way that we can all work on breaking down this fear of boys mm-hmm. that has inhibited both them in the community. And it's frankly, it inhibits their personal growth because when people don't want to engage with them, that robs them of opportunities to learn from others. So it's win, win, win. And teaching and role modeling manners and how to interact and what to do in public is part of making that happen.
And just remembering what you said earlier, Gemma, about how literal boys are. Like, we have to be so specific and lay it out for them. We can't assume that they're going to, as we've been talking about, that they're going to pick it up. So be so specific with them.
Mm-hmm. And I think, too, it's we have learned to kind of give, I mean, both of our boys, but definitely our oldest, a lot more autonomy and independence we happen to live, we live in in an urban area, but it's Boise, but we live very close to downtown. And so one of the things is that my kids love to go to the Y. Well, when my oldest walked home one day without our knowledge, it was about 2 years ago, and he showed up at home and it was hilarious. But going back to be literal, so his dad had gone to pick him up. He was waiting. And then all of a sudden, Ben shows up at the house, and I was literally like, "Where? So is your dad in the car?" "No, I don't know where dad is." "What do you mean you don't know where your dad is?" "I walked home." "No, you didn't. We live 3 miles from the Y." This child walked home, but was like walking through downtown, stopped at BSU, took some pictures, was just having a grand old time, knew how to get himself home. So that's what I said to Mike. "Okay, so I apparently forgot to tell you that you can't leave one location without telling me that you're going to another location." "So we need to have some conversation." So it was honestly like, "So you can do this. You need to let us know. Every single time you leave a location, we need to know." And, moving forward and putting the, like, literally very specific things in place for him to be able to do that. Now, fast forward 2 years, he'll go to the Y, he'll meet up with friends, and then he'll be like, "Mom, we're going to go, we're going to go to this place downtown." "Okay. Hey, Mom, so-and-so drove here. Can we go to the mall?" "Yes." And because of that, because I'm also big on, I don't need to track you all the time, but you do need to tell me where you are.
Yeah.
Because I want him to not only learn that responsibility, but I also want him to learn accountability. Mm-hmm. That you're accountable when you're in relationship, right? This happens to be a parent-child relationship, but if you're ever in a romantic relationship, friendships, you are accountable. So this is one thing you do, is you need to ask me, then I need to know where you're going, with who, this or that. And it has just become second nature with him. But this has been something that we have been working on and being very diligent about for the last 2 years, when he decided to walk home by himself without telling us. Mm-hmm. But that's also when I realized, oh, you're ready for this. Like, yeah. I wasn't ready, but you're ready for it. So now let's make sure we do this in a way that is safe for you. And it's also that that other people aren't afraid of you, all of these things, right?
Janet, you talked recently with Jerome Hunter, And one of the things he talked about is as boys hit those middle school years and early adolescent years, they want more autonomy and freedom and independence. And you are frequently telling parents, hey, your parenting has to shift as your boys hit this age. And talking to you right now, Gemma, it sounds a little bit like this was an easy transition for you, but I see your the look.
Sure, it was. Yeah.
Right. But I know from experience that it rarely is. So talk to the other parents who may be navigating this. You know, it's such a shift from basically I control your whole world to I'm letting you do more and I have to sort of sit by and watch you screw up.
Okay. I'm going to tell you a little secret, and my kids aren't here, and my oldest doesn't know this, and he'll never listen to this podcast. So I know a lot of parents who use these apps, one being like Life 360, right? Yep. So you can track your child, like, I mean, to the point where I literally had friends say, like, their kids won't tell them where they're going or what they're doing. They're like, all you're going to do is look on the app.
Oh.
Well, what we did was we just enabled Find My iPhone on my oldest iPhone. All that does is show me where his phone is, where the what location. He does not know this. I'm not going to tell him this. And here is why. Is because it goes back to that accountability. I want him to be telling me where he is going, who he is with, all of those things. If he knew that that was enabled, my oldest would flat out never tell me a thing.
You're
he'd be like, well, you're going to track. He'd be like, you're going to track me anyway. So what's funny is sometimes he'll be somewhere and he may not have told me. Right. Especially if he's with a friend who can drive. And then all I'll say is like, how are things going at the Y? I'll just text him. And they'll be like, oh, so we went to the mall. Sorry, I meant to text you. I'm like, oh, okay. Well, let me know if you're going anywhere else. And then it's like, oh, we're going to Olive Garden. Oh, we're doing this. We're going back to so-and-so's house. It's one of those things that, I mean, I'm sure some people disagree with that about not letting him know. But I don't want to make him feel guilty about not telling me. I don't want him to feel shame about not telling me. It is a matter of, I need him to be accountable for where he is and to take responsibility for what he's doing. So for a parent who's just starting this, we started very, very small. And I didn't feel comfortable giving my oldest any leeway until I could physically contact him. So he got a phone when he went into sixth grade, when he went into middle school. And then what I would do is if I was running late after school, he couldn't have his phone on in school. They have really, really strict policies. So he actually had to be outside of the school gate, then he could turn his phone on. And so then I would sometimes text him and be like, hey, I'm running 20 minutes late. Go get your brother and walk over to this store, because there's a store by their school that a lot of kids go to, and stay there and I'll pick you up. And he was highly responsible and he always did that. And he would always text me back. But we also were like, if I text you, you must text me back, you know, and if I'm trying to get a hold of you, you know, take your ringer off silent when you turn your phone back on. Right. Again,
super concrete, super specific.
Right. And so you have to start really, really small with get your brother, walk across the street. I will pick you up. And then, you know, but he was 11 and a half. He was sixth grade. So we're talking 4 years. Now we are at this point because he's also going to be driving within the next year.
Yeah.
And there was no way that I was going to have my kid drive and get behind the wheel of a car without having learned any type of responsibility or accountability.
Yeah.
But you have to start really small, like pick up your brother, go across the street.
And start earlier than you think. And I think too, you know, looking for opportunities for them to have some autonomy earlier than you, especially as mama, think that it's time to have that. It's hard. It's hard to let your kid walk to the store the first time by themselves.
He was so much more he was much more ready than I was. But what I find is that now with my youngest, I give him more leeway because I'm like, oh, I think younger kids can kind of be ready for it because they have an older sibling. But also, I don't have this horrible, desperate fear. It's kind of like I'm in this point now where I keep thinking about like my oldest going away to college. Yeah. I mean, I've got 3 years, right? And it is this like literally like I can break out in hives thinking about it. I had his kindergarten teacher tell me just the other day, she said, she goes, so the anticipation of them leaving is worse than them leaving. And I was like, oh, really? And she was like, I swear to God. She goes, it is. She was like, it is the anticipation of them leaving. So it's even with those little things before we ever get to them going away to college, is I think that we as parents and as moms have such a, we have such a fear that something is going to happen to them, that they won't know what to do. So we hold on so tight. And it's like, we've got to give them little baby steps to autonomy so that when we release them into the wild, into high school, right, that they have a, that they know how to make good choices. At least most of the time, they know how to make good choices.
Most of the time, emphasize that part.
Yeah. I think that them gaining autonomy is critically important. And the other thing that I've started to do with my teen is I try not to tell him what to do anymore. And I try not to say, you must do this, you must do that. Like just before we got on this call, he is supposed to go to an open gym for basketball after school today. He also has a biology test tomorrow. It's also the end of the school year. And, you know, he just wants to also be done with things. So he texts me and he's like, because now he can have his phone on in high school. They can have their phone on in high school. And he was like, do I have to go to open gym today? And he goes, because I need to study for biology. And I said, well, you missed it Friday. I think maybe you should go at least for a little while. Maybe I could pick you up early and then you could come home and study. And he's like, well, I'm sick too. And I'm like, okay, well, if it were me, I would maybe not go today, but go Friday. Well, I'll see how I feel. And so it goes on and on and on. But with that said, I try to use more statements about here's what I would do in that situation. Well, you know, instead of telling him what to do, because it's almost more like they need me now to, he needs me now to kind of coach him. And so I finally said to him, as we're going back and forth in this text ring, I said, well, it's up to you. It's up to you. What do you want to do?
Yeah, you've laid out the options and ultimately it is his decision. You can give that over to him and bravo.
Because I think that we feel like sometimes we have to continue to tell them what to do and they don't want us to tell them what to do, but if we continue to tell them what to do, they'll never know what to do when we're not there.
Yeah.
So true.
It's that place where we have two options. I mean, even as adults, it's hard to decide, oh, should I do this or should I do that? And you're kind of paralyzed in that. So coaching them through those moments is helping build that muscle.
Yeah.
Parenting preteens and teens is so different in so many ways from, you know, parenting our younger boys, preschoolers, certainly infants, even elementary school kids. That is such a hands-on stage of parenting. Like they literally need us to feed them and clothe them and transport them places. And so all that's gone now. And yet you are describing it is still a very intensive stage of parenting. It might not look like you are doing anything, but all of this coaching and helping manage emotions and teaching how to manage emotions, it is an intensive stage of parenting that just looks very different than your previous ones. And so to all of you parents who are out there, I also want to say, like, I see you. I see the work that you are doing. Sometimes it might look like I'm just sitting on the couch or laying on the couch and not doing anything, but my head is spinning or I'm having like two text conversations, managing stuff and coaching somebody through it. It's work. It matters. And it is so important.
And I think that for me, at least, every stage of parenting has its joys and its difficulties. You know, for example, my sister was here over Easter and she has a 2-year-old. And good Lord, I was like, oh, thank God. I'm
Janet, you're going to be there with Bo soon.
But it takes you back to that time of how physically
demanding.
Intense that time of parenting is, right? It's the physicality of parenting. I mean, you have to keep your eye on them all of the time, because if they stick something in their mouth, they could choke and they could die and all of these things. But I feel like now I am in this stage of parenting where it's the mental load of parenting. Mm-hmm. That mental load, it never stops. Like it is, because all of a sudden I feel like it's like, oh, this child's actually a human being that's going to be out in the world, and will he be ready? Yeah. And I have 3 years, and it's just, there is a mental load and a mental toll, and they are breaking away from you. They are being their worst selves in so many ways around you, right? So it's all of these, just, it's so intense. It is so intense. And you're right, Jen, that I think sometimes it looks like parents of teens are just sitting back, not doing anything. And I mean, I feel like it's constant in a way that it wasn't when they were younger, because it was just physical when they were younger.
When they were younger, I could put them to bed and be done for the day.
Yes.
No longer true. No longer true.
No, because my oldest wants to have a conversation at 10 o'clock at night.
Absolutely. Yep. Yeah.
I won't talk to you for a week. I will say 3 words to you. But then at 10 o'clock at night, when I'm literally about to go to bed, hey, mom. And you're like, I need now. And then you know you have to have the conversation.
Yes.
I so look forward to checking in with you when your oldest is 17. Let's let him get some driving a little bit, but let's check in a couple years when he's 17 and see how things are going.
And I will say this, I think it's so important that we tell each other that we are good parents, right?
Yes.
When you see a parent, like it means the world. And I think that sometimes we forget that. And, you know, even when my sister was here, you know, I just looked at her one day and I go, you're such a good mom. Mm. You know, you're a good mom. And we need to hear that, especially in these teenage years.
Because our kids aren't necessarily telling it to us. Not like when they were 4 and they're like, mommy, I'm going to marry you.
No. Now it is. I mean, literally, you could say the sky is blue and they'd be like, no, it's not.
Exactly. Gemma, thank you so much for joining us today. You are a wise woman. You are a wise mama, and your insight and understanding of boys, and then your willingness to be real about the whole thing. We love that. And I know our listeners do too. Thank you, Gemma.
Oh, thank you both.
Wise words from a wise and experienced mama. We hope you've enjoyed this episode. Please share it with a friend, and thank you for supporting our sponsors. This is the On Boys Parenting Podcast. We are your co-hosts, Jennifer L.W. Fink of buildingboys.net, and I'm Janet Allison of boysalive.com.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Get 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then get 1-pound packages of flavorful 80% lean Angus ground beef chuck for $3.99 each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.